You're listening to the Cannabis Investing Network. Before we begin, a short disclaimer. The full disclaimer follows at the end of this episode. This podcast is a general communication and is being provided for entertainment and information purposes only. It is educational in nature and is not designed to be a recommendation for any specific investment strategy, plan, feature, or other purpose. Please enjoy responsibly. Hello and welcome back to the Cannabis Investing Network podcast. My name is Manish, and oh my goodness, what a start to the year it has been. Happy 2024, everybody. Joining us today for a very fun episode that I'm really looking forward to, Mike, aka MJ Stock Trader on Twitter. Welcome back to the program.
Yeah, it's good to see you again. Happy New Year.
Good to see you over the audio only.
Yeah, exactly.
Happy New Year to you. And how's the start of the year been for you?
Really good. I mean, the sector is doing really good. Just myself, I'm sure if you follow me on Twitter, I've not completely gotten off of social media when it comes to the cannabis space, but I just lessened my time on there, spend more time with friends, family, work. But I've been pretty much not fully invested, but still deeply invested in cannabis and following the space and trading more than investing. But it's kind of how you got to make money in the cannabis last couple of years.
Yeah, well, it's also funny, right? I mean, your name on your handle on there is MJ Stock Trader, right? And as you and I were chatting about before this, I feel like this year is truly the year of cannabis being a trading vehicle, where I think the stock prices and performance will be completely disconnected from fundamental performance because we are so sentiment and headline driven right now, right? And maybe for the first time since I think back to, you know, when I started in 2017 and 18, there so much is riding just on what's going to happen, totally disconnected from the fundamentals of the companies. And I think that's why it was really, it's really great to have you on today, because I want to talk about, you know, how sentiment, social media, and trading is really going to be impacted based on all the things we're talking about today.
Yeah. Trading cannabis, because they're on the OTC, you know, you get hit with those commissions. So you're a little bit different than if you're trading, you know, most stocks that your brokers don't charge you for. So you have to, it's hard to trade cannabis if you're a small investor. And I say small, you know, there's a lot of guys that use Robinhood and they just buy, you know, $100, $200. You really can't do that with a lot of these stocks because mm-hmm. you're paying that $4.95 every time you do it, at least for E-Trade. And some charge more. I think Verano at one point, I heard people tell me that they get charged like $25 from their brokerage, you know, a few years ago. And it all depends on what the OTC they were on. But yeah, I think that's fair. I always, in the MJ Stock Trader, I've always said if we ever got safe banking passed or we got rescheduled, I change it to MJ Stock Investor. still waiting for that day to happen.
MJ Stock Holder.
Yeah, Stock Holder. Yep. And I do, there is some investments I do. Ascend is one of my investments I had for a while now since it was like, I think I'm up like 100% on that. So that's to me, just holding that. That's one of my core holdings in cannabis. And the rest I've generally have traded.
Got it. Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I think especially with the way it's performed, trading has been a much better strategy, right? But things are the way they are until they change. And I mean, on that note, like, let's talk about how the year has started. And I think it started with an absolute bang. And the real question, I think, on everyone's mind is what's next? So the agenda for today is we're going to talk through what's happened to start the year. I've kind of broken the last 3 weeks down into a couple of stages in terms of what happened and how sentiment has shifted. And then we're going to talk specifically about what's next with regards to lawsuits, primaries, elections, DEA announcement, Florida Supreme Court, and what are some risks and considerations and scenarios that people aren't necessarily talking enough about. So I think just to start, let's talk about kind of how the year ended and how the year started, right? So ending 2023, we did a podcast called The Game Plan for Investing in 2024. And the general thesis of the episode was that I think that 24 is a really good opportunity as long as you're buying the stocks at a cheap enough price. And at the time we did that episode, I think we recorded in kind of late November, early December, I said that stocks are generally okay, but not super cheap, right? And then to end the year, they did get quite a bit cheaper. And the game plan was wait until they're a bit cheaper, start loading the boat on selective names. And the thesis was that between rescheduling, between election talk ramping up into November, and between the Florida Supreme Court decision, there was enough interesting catalysts in the mix that if you were buying them at the right price, it was a pretty good gamble going into November of 2024, right? And I thought that as the year was ending that, hey, I could go on vacation, don't really worry too much. It's probably nothing that's going to, you know, change overnight, because when I left, they were, you know, a little bit rich for my taste, not cheap enough. And I figured by the time I come back, you know, we'll have time to figure it out and get everything set up and et cetera. And, you know, sure enough, the stocks got cheaper to end the year. But then to start the year, it absolutely took off with a bang. And the very first, I guess, stage that I'll call it was an absolutely, you know, what I call a nothing burger of an article talking about how the DEA confirmed to, I think, a congressman that it was reviewing HHS's recommendation, right? Which is news that we already had, right? Is absolutely non-news. And yet it started a little bit of a firestorm, totally unpredictably, right at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I think it reminded a lot of people of what's to come, I think. And there's, I think there was some lawsuits, right, to the FOIA requests and that stuff, and people were trying to get all this DEA stuff to kind of get with her on. Because I think part of the end of the year, I think there was some December, you know, people were talking about some December timeline or end state that the DEA had to have something out. And when that date hit, it kind of, you know, crushed some of the stocks. And then I think it put us, a lot of the stocks, in the red for the year. And then you get that tax loss harvesting. And then when that DEA letter came out, you know, Marijuana Moment, I think, put that out there. And it just made stocks go crazy. I think it just kind of reminded people what's 2024 has been, you know, a lot of the talk for rescheduling because of Biden's promise, you know, 4 years ago.
Yeah. So just to unpack kind of some of the things you mentioned there, right? So it was a really interesting moment because it's the ultimate case of, even when, like, when it comes to stocks and markets, you really never know. And there's always this unpredictability. And sometimes we talk about, you know, kind of the black swan or the you know, catalyst that kind of drops out of the sky, like we had today, which we'll talk about later. But even when the information's out there, right, even though we all know that the DEA is reviewing this recommendation, it could just be a news article, you know, a media article that gets people excited, right? It's a new year. People have fresh perspectives. People want to try something new. And it could be just that reminder that, hey, something is potentially coming that gets everybody excited, right? And it's media. It was on CNBC. You saw, you know, kind of new buyers and you know, traders emerging and getting excited about it. And one in particular that, you know, I want to give a kind of a shout out to is somebody named Shardy B. And no idea, you know, who this person is, but they just kind of magically appeared and kind of picked up the you know, the MSOS gang label that people had kind of forgot about. And it's funny, you know, Mike, when you think about last year, to start 23, you know, everyone started the year really depressed because cannabis stocks cratered after no safe banking. And then this guy just emerges, you know, Don Murphy, right? And he ends up being like the most active guy on safe banking. And you know, while everyone's depressed, he's constantly, you know, tweeting and doing videos and all this stuff. And it's like he just came out of nowhere. And this year, I feel like that name is Shardy B, where this person just is suddenly talking about MSOS, doesn't seem to have any connection to the industry before, but is kind of always pumping up their followers and saying, hey, this is the trade for the year. This is the trade you guys should all be excited about. And it's nice to see a breath of fresh air. But I also think this is a really interesting name to follow, because it's going to be interesting to see how people who are trading focused and how people are new to the sector react when there are red days and red periods that some of us have all lived through and been scarred by.
Yeah, I think what Shardy is doing, and I think you have to start looking at it. And I'll, you know, I'm looking at like I've been buying China stocks this week, and I say that because the whole Warren Buffett or any basic investing is buy low, sell high, right? So I think Shardy B and these other folks are looking at, like, when I woke up this morning and my alert started hitting at 9:30, it was all these 52-week highs on Google and all the tech stocks. So if you've been if you've been making a fortune this last year, everything's peaking, like NASDAQ, right? So
you're saying all the non-cannabis stuff.
All the non-cannabis stuff, right?
Right. It's
all
peaking. Okay.
But then when you zoom out on something like MSOS, you're like, hey, this thing's had a run and it's still down 90% from its like high, right? I think the high on is like 50 something, right? I know Truly was like 53 or something like that. So, you know, someone like Shardy B is looking like, where can I go next that could make a big impact? And especially something that liquid like cannabis, you can move your followers into something kind of like we know what the Wall Street Bets did, right? With a lot of the GameStop and other kind of stuff. And this is like super liquid compared to GameStop, which has probably traded millions of shares a day when that thing went off. So I think someone like Shardy B, who's I think it was more of a technical kind of analyst. I'm not really a big, I heard the name a lot over the years, but not really familiar. But I look, it seems he or she, I guess it's she, looks at the tech part, the technical analysis side of it, and it's clearly on the upswing and probably zoomed out and going, wow, this thing has some room. And then you start hearing all this legislative thing, because any trader knows, like, you know, Dan, the chart guy, those things knows that you look at the charts, but then you look for catalysts ahead, right, to move this thing going, knowing that money might flow in. So I think while Shardy B is probably learning about cannabis, the chart probably enticed her to come in and get into this area.
It's also funny you mentioned that, because where over the last few years, you know, you saw people post tables, right? And that was, I think, a big driver of decision-making for people, or at least how they rationalize their decision-making. It was, hey, look at AIR on an EV, basis, it's super cheap. Right. And sometimes those tables are completely wrong, by the way, but it doesn't matter. Right. People just look at it and they're like, okay, cool. And for the last 3 weeks, I don't think I've seen a single table. You know, all I've seen is charts, right? Like charts. Look at these arrows. Look at this, you know, cup and handle and upside down shoulders or whatever it's called. I don't follow these things clearly.
Yeah.
But look, they're very real. That's how a lot of people make their decisions. That's how traders certainly make their decisions. And, you know, those charts can fall apart anytime. And certainly they don't always work, especially on more illiquid things. But it certainly has been interesting to see that, the frequency of those increase over the last few weeks. So that's a big part of that, this kind of first initial stage we were talking about, where you're getting, I think, new eyeballs and interest, into the sector, and they're looking at things that maybe you or I necessarily wouldn't be looking at.
Yeah. To me, technical analysis is like, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it's like silent, you know, it's like a silent signal to buy. So everyone who studies the same, you know, idea of like when it hits a certain price, it's cheap. When it hits a certain, you know, another price, it's over, you know, RSI, all this stuff. Well, if a bunch of people see the same signal and buy, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. There's no other reason to buy it, right? So they're all guys like Dan, you know, they train an army of people, and then he got trained from other folks, and they all see these same signals together. So they all go into the market together. And then when you're a liquid like this, you really can move it. And we know when you move MSOS, inflows come in and then they start buying, you know, the underlines, and you really get this momentum going. And I think that's what some of these people like Shardy and Dan, the chart guy, kind of do.
Well, that actually, this is a great point that you're making here that I just want to talk about quickly, which is that a little bit of momentum can lead to a lot of momentum the way our industry is set up, because that little bit of momentum causes money to be poured into MSOS, right? And that causes inflows. And then that money that goes to Dan, meaning Dan of MSOS, he spends that money at the end of the day, right? So we all know that the stocks are going to go up at the end of the day, and we know where that's coming from, right? So if you ever want to sell, the time to sell is the end of the day, right? And you know, you catch that kind of weird pop at the end. But to people who are from the outside looking in, they don't know that. And what they see is they see the stocks are up a couple points. Okay, cool. Then by the end of the day, they're up, you know, 5 or 7 points, and you're like, wow, okay, something's clearly going on here, right? And then that happens again over 2 or 3 days, and people are like, whoa, like something's happening here. There's something exciting here. Look at the chart. It's getting really exciting, right? But as we've lived through, if that volume is not sustained, then that can't continue, right? So I think that's a good note to shift gears and talk about what happened next. So stage two was after that initial, you know, news-driven pop, then I had, you know, what I call kind of reality. So just to give you kind of dates, I mean, today is Monday night, January 22nd. And, you know, I'm talking about kind of the week of January 8th. And somewhere in this week, you started to see the stocks go the other way, right? And it felt like, hey, we've all seen this movie before. It's the same thing we've all seen. People are getting excited about, let's say, nothing, you know, information that's already out there. And the stock sold off and sold off pretty hard, right? You had double digit negative days, and negativity started to creep back in as the, you know, seasoned and battle hardened cannabis investors said, yeah, nothing has changed. This is the exact same. We've got a slow bleed ahead of us until the DEA actually says something, or until we actually have a change of information. And to go back to Shardy B, I actually checked that feed 2 days in a row when it was going negative, and it was pretty quiet. It was mostly talking about Bitcoin and other things, with a little bit of like, hey, I'm still holding, nothing's wrong, or like, oh, if this is a bad day, but you know, it'll be fine, right? So I have noticed that, right? On good days, there's a lot of talk about this. On bad days, not so much, you know, talk about this. So this ended up being a very short-lived stage, but I thought this was a really important way to look at how quickly sentiment can change in this industry, and how we as these investors have been conditioned to be like, hey, this doesn't really mean much until we actually get the big news that we're waiting for.
Yeah, exactly. I went back, and I always like to look at some of my calls, and I was looking, I retweeted today when MSOX went below 250, I put this little pound button, I think it was a duck pounding the buy. I'm like, 250, yep, time to pound the buy, right? And then I did, and then I ended up selling out because of, you know, I forget what happened like a week later for I think it was a very small profit. And then now it's, you know, over 100% from that point. But I think what I noticed is Todd points it out a lot, Todd Harrison, the short interest, as we were getting all this good news, the short interest, as the stocks move higher, the short interest keeps increasing on MSOX. And it was, it's interesting. I like to go look at that today. That kind of gave an indicator if we all think back to that GameStop point, if the short interest can keep increasing while we're going up slowly like this, because they're trying to defend the territory, that we could really have a, because I can imagine I don't know what the short interest was, but I think it might have been like 2 or 3, which means, you know, you got to, the short ratio was like 3. So it's like 3 days of buying to move it. So you can imagine if rescheduling came out and these shorts had this like peak interest of shorts, interest of ratio is like 3, you can really see this thing take off. But yeah, the sentiment driven is, it's always been that. And I say we have this PTSD if you've been in the sector for, you know, the last 3 years, there's a deep PTSD. Some like me, I have, where I want to lock my gains in when I see it turning, because I don't know anyone who's been this 3 years that didn't see their stuff go up, you know, 60% and then mm-hmm. negative like weeks later or a month later. And that has a way of flushing people out of the sector, especially since it's retail driven, right? I think it's like 4% institutional or something like that, where the average, you know, sector is like 40 to 60%, I think. So it's very retail driven. We've been crushed year after year. Really good people I knew are really good or not in it anymore. And I hate to, you know, see them wash out, you know, mm-hmm. a few months before rescheduling could possibly happen. But yeah, it's just such a brutal, illiquid environment. And, you know, you could be up 60% and then be down a month or two later in the red.
Well, these are some good points you're making here, because, and I want to just talk again about sentiment psychology. It's so self-fulfilling, because when the stocks go up and they end green on the day, right, and they have especially a big jump in the day, then people who are not really watching the space, who have been in the space, maybe have some holdings, aren't really paying attention, they come back and they go, hey, what happened? Like, what am I missing? Right. And then they go look on Reddit, they go look on Twitter. They're like, what, you know, something happening here that I'm not seeing. Right. And they start asking, why are they up? And they start, so you find the reason why they're up and you go, oh, interesting. This is exciting. And vice versa. Right. So when they're down 10% or 15% in a day, then you're going, hey, what the hell is going on here? Right. And then people are kind of saying, well, you know, it's not coming as fast as we think, et cetera, et cetera. So positivity kind of leads people to look for positivity and vice versa, right? And to your point, I mean, what has worked for the past, I don't know, 2 years is trading the stocks, right? Not getting married to them. And it's really difficult, because a lot of people will tell you when they, you know, like the thing, they like the stock, they like, you know, that company, whatever. And so it sort of tell you when they're buying and they're a supporter of it, but very few people will say when they're selling. Because, you know, people get mad, it pisses off the companies, you know, people only talk about what they're buying, and you're sort of like, where's all this money coming from, right? I mean, are you just constantly putting money in and never selling? And again, to your point, like, trading has worked really well. So I think this is an important point, because some of the things we're going to talk about later when it comes to, you know, the DEA and the future catalysts are, what if we get delayed? What happens when we have doubt start to creep back in? People, I think, are definitely going to start thinking, hey, I don't want to get caught again making the same mistake that I made the last year or 2 years, right? People like to feel good. They like to do what works, and they don't like to get caught looking stupid. And that's where we have all been. Certainly I have been, you know, as a holder over the last couple of years. And so that has become ingrained behavior that's going to be a little bit hard to shake for people.
Yeah, dead time is the enemy to the cannabis sector. And you always get a little worried when we're hitting these all-time highs on I was reading today, like, I think the S&P and NASDAQ are hitting like new records. So mm-hmm. you're hitting these highs in election year. And you just don't, you know, you hate to have your stock not hitting new highs in the broader market is. And then if the broader market turns a little bit, then, you know, cannabis seems to always get wiped out harder, because the beta is just so much higher. So you just don't know. But yeah, it's just that the idle hands, you know, if we don't get any news. But there's just, you know, I know we're going to talk about it. There's just so many potential catalysts between, you know, the next, you know, we got 420, you got this Florida ballot date, April 1st is coming, and then hopefully rescheduling, you know, sometime this summer.
Yeah, I think 420 is probably a good goalpost from where we are today, right? That's 3 months from now, right? And then the other goalpost I would say is basically November, right? So that's election time, and that is, you know, give or take 9 months from where we are today, right? A little bit longer. But so you have a goalpost 3 months from now, and you have a goalpost 9 months from now. And it's interesting, like, when we think about kind of what's happening next is, you know, people, I think that 420 date is going to be very telling, right? Because leading into that date, we're going to be looking at understanding if Florida is actually on the ballot, right? Which today we got some positive indication, not concrete, but positive. We're also going to have a much better idea of where we are with rescheduling, maybe, right? And I think that, and here's the question, is I think that a lot of the people buying today, if nothing happens in 3 months, right? Like, I think some of those people might be disappointed. I think, you know, when you see some people are kind of thinking like it's going to happen any weekend now, right? I mean, it seems to be a pretty unrealistic expectation of how long you might have to hold to see a payoff.
Yeah. One thing I know about politicians, only thing certain in politician, error, these guys, is that they'll move the goalpost over and over and over. Right. So even though we know that, like when I interviewed Kim, that Supreme Court's supposed to make a decision by April 1st, or it's supposed to automatically go on the ballot. Who knows? Right. I think she's right on that, but somehow they find ways to screw it up. Like, but yeah, 421 could be brutal for the sector if nothing happens by 420.
Well, the last 420s have actually been bad days.
Yes.
Right.
We expected stuff and we didn't get it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's expectations, right? So moving on. So that stage two, which is reality setting in, the negativity, that was very short lived because that was maybe 2 or 3 days. And then what happened is people started talking about this idea of the Matt Zorin lawsuit. And that's a freedom of information request. And the idea was this lawyer had basically sued to get access to the full unredacted HHS memo that no one had actually seen. In fact, we didn't even know, there was no confirmation that HHS recommended a rescheduling to Schedule 3. It was all, I guess, hearsay, media articles, et cetera. So there was a strong hunch, but nobody really had confirmed it. And this Freedom of Information Act, the idea was that very shortly we were going to get a response back. And they responded back and said, essentially, hey, it doesn't matter because there's going to be something released in short order, that in which case this won't matter. So the commentary and murmurs I started seeing were around, hey, that means the full DEA decision is coming in the next couple days. And that's why it won't matter about the memo. The whole thing's coming. So everyone's getting all excited. This is, you know, very much like in the weeds rumor on Twitter kind of stuff, right? But you know, that did not end up happening. What ended up happening is on a long weekend Friday, the full memo got released, right? So we didn't get the DEA rule, obviously, but we got the full HHS memo. Now, that in itself is a pretty historic moment, right? Because you're seeing, you know, a very lengthy government document talking about, you know, science around cannabis, the wrongs that the government has committed with regards to the war on drugs. So very historic moment. And, you know, big props to Matt Zorin for forcing HHS's hand in doing it. But it's interesting to see how the can gets kicked down the road. And this is, you know, what I'm calling stage three, the freedom of information in the HHS memo. This is actually a very, although nothing really changed, something did change in that the memo is actually released. We can see the full text of it. We can see the scientific support behind it. And we have confirmation that hey, it is a recommendation for Schedule 3.
Yeah, and I think the big headline was cannabis is medicine, right? These are the government, actually a federal government agency, you know, HHS, saying that this cannabis is medicine based on the research. And I think when we initially had, I think it was last summer, when we really had that 2 or 3 week rally of like just major proportions, was it was leaked out, right? And that's generally what, you know, people could see with the DEA, where someone just leaks it out to get it really prodded forward. But I think you were right when you said, you know, the goalpost is April, you know, 420. And if we don't get it by then, what happens? And my theory is this doesn't come out by mistake this time. I think it comes out based on the biggest political advantage to Joe Biden. You know, we all know it's an election year. When can he maximize? If you looked at the polling data, it was crazy. I tweeted out this New York Times polling of between 18 and 29 year olds, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And it showed Biden in 2020 was up by like, I think he won that demographic by like 15 points. Hmm. And then it showed today, it shows Trump up by like 7 or 8 or something like, I can't remember the exact number, but
with the same demo?
The same exact demo.
Wow.
So to me, that's good for us because that's who people are looking at when they reschedule, who they're targeting. Even though I don't think youth smoking has gone up significantly, and even though all these states are legalized, I think your smokers are still the 30 and over kind of crowd. I think these young kids are more vapers, and I just don't know that there is as much consumption as people think it is. But I think the politicians do believe that this is targeting the youth vote, right? So I always ask, okay, so when can Biden get the most out of this? It's not now during these primaries while the Republicans are going to their primary system right now. Because we know March is going to have, we have your Super Tuesday where you finally kind of get something, which then leads into April. But then, okay, so when can they maximize it so it's fresh in people's minds when they're, you know, they're voting in November? And that's when I think it's like a September-ish kind of October-ish kind of thing. It's not an October surprise. That's usually like when they drop some Trump tape, you know, him saying something stupid. That's like the October surprise. But like what he said, the grab him in the, I won't say what, but that's the October surprise stuff, right? But this is something I think is major, and I think he thinks he can sway a lot of the youth vote, and he might be right on that, but I think it sways a lot more than the youth vote in swing states that he needs. We all know this comes down to like six states, every presidential election. It's your Arizona, your Pennsylvania, your Michigan, Florida, those kind of states. And, you know, where can he make the most up on it? And I think it's going to be a political decision more than anything else, because I just don't think they make decisions based on what's best for the country, what's best for the cannabis industry. They make what's best for their power and their reelection chances.
Yeah, agreed there. I think that rings true for everybody. So let's, since we jumped ahead there, and we're on the stage three of you know, the Freedom of Information, HHS, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the what's next part of this, right? So this is where I can kind of tie my mind into a pretzel trying to think about this, but I think it's really important to think through. And there's two ways to look at this. One is that, I guess the question comes down to this. What maximizes the impact for Democrats in the election season? Is it for the DEA to drop the initial proposed rule right before the election in October? And actually, I think it should be in October because, like whatever the, I've talked about this before. Do they drop the initial rule there, or do they want the, you know, final, you know, what I call the mic drop moment to be in October? And I think it has to be October because it's got to be pretty close to the actual election. Because if you do it in the summer or September, it's too far away. The attention span is too short these days. You want to make sure that people are actually focused on the thing when they go to the ballot, right? And if we rewind to 2022, the midterms, that's exactly what they did. They had cannabis and student loan forgiveness. Those were the headlines that came out in October, maybe I think 2 or 3 weeks before the election, maybe 3 weeks. So long enough that you could get the word out and people could hear about it and you could sort of, you know, campaign on it, but short enough that people would remember it and remember it when they went to the ballot, and also short enough that people could not poke holes in it. Because when you look at those two things, right, the idea of cannabis rescheduling and the pardons associated with it, there was a great op-ed by I think it was Weldon Angelos who wrote it, or at least was a co-author on it, saying that, hey, all these pardons are great, but you didn't get anyone out of prison, right? The pardons that you had on the federal level really didn't help anyone get out of prison, which, by the way, is not an accident. That's very intentional on their part, because they want to make sure that there's nothing for the Republicans to attack. Right? They're like, you know, we didn't even free anybody, right? It's all symbolic, essentially. But there was not enough time for the general public to absorb that. Similarly, with the student loan forgiveness, that got challenged by the courts and ultimately struck down, right? But that took time to happen. So the voters did not see that outcome until much later. So, Mike, going back to this question of what maximizes the political outcome for Joe Biden, is it to release the initial proposed rule right before the election so that nobody has time to really poke holes in it, right? I'm kind of leaning that way, that makes the most sense. Because if you release the proposed rule in April, Then you have to go through a public comment period. You got to go through, you know, all these various groups saying, hey, this is horrible. The DA has to take in all that information. They have to respond to all that information. So if you wanted it to happen right before the election, then yes, you probably would need a proposed rule. I don't know if it's in April. It could be before April, right? It could be Feb, March, April. But April's probably the latest you could do it in order to make the timeline line up. But what if there's so much, you know, public input? What if there's just so much stuff they have to deal with that they can't do it in time, the final rule for actual for October, right? So the more I kind of noodle it over, I think that maybe it's the proposed rule that comes in October so that it's fresh and nobody can poke holes in it. So that's kind of something I've been wrestling with.
Yeah, I think there's two things that the Democrats will calculate. Even though I think most people, if you look at the politics of a new House Speaker, that while safe banking will probably not become law this year, I think Schumer can still roll it out and get it passed in the Senate and then mm-hmm. leverage it against the Republicans in the House and say, look, I got it and they killed it. And then that kind of puts it cannabis early this spring and into the summer maybe. And as it dies down, you bring out rescheduling and say, well, we tried to the, you know, now I have to go this route, which is rescheduling it through executive, you know, power. So there's a couple of, I think people have called safe banking dead, which is correct as far as it becoming law. But I still think Schumer has it where he could still present it and get a vote on it. Because I think if you look at, we talked about Don Murphy, I think he still sees there's over 60 votes for it in the Senate. It's just that it'll never be a top 20 priority for Republicans in the House. So it never has a chance to get presented, I think. But you can still use it politically, right? Because Schumer is facing a lot of pressure in New York. You know, you have all these, you have 2,500 illegal stores and you have all these, you know, they're trying to get, I think the MSO is going to be allowed to sell. They try to pay a fee and that's being, I think, fought in the courts. I think Boris and the folks are fighting that fee in the courts, like $20 million or something like that to sell into a state that has no legal stores to really sell it into. So you're getting hit with the price, you get hit with high taxes, and there's just not the stores to sell it. So, you know, is Schumer thinking, hey, let's get safe up there. Let's see the Republicans kill it. And then we go to the executive side of it.
Yeah, look, it's an interesting point because at the end of the day, like we're all here to talk about, you know, cannabis and implications and in politics, right? But they didn't like it. I think for them, it's such an afterthought. I think that, you know, what we're seeing where we are today on the Republican side, it looks like it's going to be Trump that's a nominee, right? Unless Nikki Haley pulls off some incredible upset.
He's the nominee. You look at his SPAC that went up 60% today or something like that because DeSantis dropped out and now he's pretty much it. So, and it's funny is when you talk about Florida, I don't want to say I called Florida, but if you, I could probably go find my old tweets. I told everyone when DeSantis won by 20 points that this looks good for the ballot because the worry was if Florida, if DeSantis won by 4 points or 5 points, that means Florida would be close in 2024. And you don't want weed on the Florida ballot in November because it brings out the Democrats. But when he won by 20 points, I was thinking like, well, he doesn't really have to worry about this now because 20 point win, cannabis is not going to put Democrats over the. And then suddenly now we have DeSantis saying, you know, it's going to happen, even though I'm kind of against it, but now it's going to go to the ballot. But just interesting thing. But I think there's all these things between now and November. So we go back, you know, Germany, I don't know if you saw the news that just came out. Germany says the health minister there thinks they're going to have it ready by March, April, the latest to be rec. I don't know if rec sales will start, but it'll be like home use and that kind of stuff. And
yeah, it's kind of their watered down plan, right?
Yeah. But, you know, that's big news, right? It's all about the headlines, like you say. And I think Curaleaf obviously benefits the most out of that. But, yep. You know, Curaleaf's a big boy at all, you know, one of the biggest in the world. So you look at like, so March, Germany, 420, you know, do we have a Schumer safe banking sometime around that time? And then we roll into October. This is all a pretty fast timeline if you really think about it.
Well, I think anything under a year in investing is pretty fast, right? Yeah. It doesn't feel that way with how people trade, but realistically, you know, to buy something today and have a concrete date of November, you know, 8th, I think, when the election day is, like, there's a lot of things that could happen up to leading up to that, right? Yeah. And part of that, by the way, is just, you know, I go back to 2020, right? The vice presidential debate. I mean, the vice presidential debate is probably the least important thing in an election. And Kamala Harris says, you know, we're going to legalize cannabis. And that was just a huge shot in the arm for the industry at a time when it wasn't, you know, it was kind of meandering. And we didn't look back, you know, for months from that debate. So you just never know how it's going to work into the conversation. To the point you're making, I mean, Florida, huge swing state, right? Again, I'm not sure. You know, listen, I hope it's going to be on the ballot. Certainly DeSantis's comments today, shout out to Don Murphy and Marijuana Moment for you know, getting that out there. We don't have the context, right? This is just Don repeating a conversation with Ron DeSantis. We don't have a video. We don't know if he was just sort of saying offhand, yeah, it's going to be on the ballot. Definitely encouraging, but it's not at all concrete. Right.
He appointed, when he got elected, he appointed three of those judges. So I think he definitely has the inside baseball. I also think he probably sees all this tax revenue. And then he's not as anti-cannabis as people make out. If you go type in DeSantis cannabis, you'll see, I think he's in line with a lot of the Rand Pauls of the world, where he's not completely libertarian, but he thinks, you know, states should be able to decide and people should be able to decide. And I don't know. You know, I just think, again, his 20-point victory gives him a lot of wiggle room when it comes to this. And he is exiting because I think, you know, you can't do more than two terms in Florida as a governor. So this was his, that's why I think he ran for president, as this would be his last term. So it's easier to get some of that passed when it's your last term, as opposed to you got to run for re-election as a Republican.
Well, and look, the point is this, right? I mean, he's secure in Florida, right? We get that, right? The question is, the calculus for the Supreme Court now is that, hey, Trump's going to run in Florida. Is Trump a shoo-in in Florida? Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be a tough election, right? I think this is going to be one of the most fiercely contested elections we've ever seen. So does this tip the scales? Again, I don't know, right? And DeSantis, to give him credit, is the one who originally, as governor, helped pass bringing smokable cannabis to the state. Before that, it was all vapes, right? So that was gigantic for the industry. I mean, massive for the industry. So plus to him. Other than that, he hasn't really done a whole lot. Other than he said he doesn't like the smell of it, whatever. That's okay, yeah. You know, fine, right? But at the end of the day, like, him making this comment, remember, it's his AG that's there fighting it in court, right? So it's not, clearly he could have just allowed it to pass by without challenging it. But I'm a little surprised that, you know, the Florida stocks were not flying on this news, right? I mean, this is a very positive indication. We'll get, you know, some confirmation of that going up to April. And hopefully it's positive confirmation, but even then we have to get 60% on the ballot. But what an incredible opportunity this would be for the cannabis industry to have Florida on the ballot. And going into this huge election, you have two of the biggest swing states, Ohio and Florida, now with cannabis as a talking point. Ohio, because they just legalized cannabis, right, at the ballot in November. And now they have to do the rules and regs. So it's very likely that sales are going to start sometime in the summer, right before election season. So that'll be a talking point, right? And then Florida, if it's on the ballot, you know it's going to come up in debate. You know it's going to come up in conversation. So it creates a beautiful opportunity.
Pennsylvania will probably make a lot of noise as well, because that state flipped. You have Shapiro, the governor, is a big, you know, legalization proponent. You have U.S. senator, you know, really pushing it. So I think the state, even though it's still controlled by Republicans at the state level, you're probably gonna hear at least a lot of noise. So the statewide stuff, you know, we had Maryland go legal. We have Ohio vote in November, you know, New Jersey before all that, and then Florida and Ohio. So that's the statewide stuff that we're gonna be hearing a lot of noise from this year, I think.
Yeah, so there's some really nice opportunities, and Florida, I think that was a beautiful surprise that we got today, right? I wouldn't, you know, bet the farm on it, but it was, as someone who owns a lot of consortium, I was definitely happy, you know, with that piece of news. And once people think that's going to happen, or once we have confirmation that it's on the ballot, I think you could really see a lot of excitement around Florida alone, right? So sorry, just to go back, Mike, to what we're talking about with the DEA, though, I think the one that I'm really curious over is going back to the question of how do they maximize political outcome? Well, the other way of looking at it is, okay, they dropped the proposed rule earlier on, say in April, and then they go through this comment period, and now it becomes a big national story and everyone's talking about it, and the stocks would absolutely explode, by the way. We all understand that, but it becomes a national conversation in an election year where, you know, definitely you'll have Republicans coming out and embarrassing themselves on this topic, right? And saying all kinds of antiquated dinosaur things. And hey, that wouldn't be so bad actually for Democrats, right? I mean, that might be a way to maximize outcome for the party overall if Republicans line up and oppose something that's so milquetoast reform. I mean, this is so far off from descheduling or legalization, right? I mean, it's the most middle of the road thing. It's just saying that cannabis has some medicinal value, right? That's all it's really saying. And if it wasn't for this weird esoteric 280E rule, it would have really no impact on anything.
Yeah, Democrats should be chirping what I've been saying for years, is that we could actually have 47, 48, even maybe 50 states with medical marijuana while it's a Schedule I drug. Ohio, I believe, became the 24th rec state. So that means half of the country, and it's probably more like 70% of the population is now recreational. And the vast majority are now medical. And to be on the side of, like, you remember the Nebraska governor, I think like 2 years ago, he's like, if we pass medical marijuana, kids will die. And people were just laughing at this guy. He's just such a dinosaur, right? And so I think it definitely could play right. And that's why I still think Schumer could bring out the safe banking and let it die in the House and then push on to the rescheduling. And they can say, look, we made our promise. And I really do think Schumer is facing a lot of problems in New York, even though he's been reelected. Mm-hmm. But he still wants to raise funds. You know, they've been raising money on cannabis like crazy. So I think he still has all those hemp farmers and social equity licenses that are still holding the bag, and they're holding their own bag, right? We investors hold a bag, but they hold their bag of, we were told all this money was going to come flowing into New York to help the social equity licenses. I think it was that Chris Weber, right? That, fund, and never happened. Mm-hmm. So I think Schumer is facing pressure. So you're going to at least see him say, here, it's on your court. And then you make these guys look foolish, the Republicans.
Yeah, it'll be interesting on that level. I mean, I don't know that Schumer will enter the conversation that much, but I take your point that safe banking, look, that could become a talking point again, right? If there's, that could become something that gets people excited again at the very least, right? So just to kind of really hammer home this point, you had a tweet here that I want to kind of summarize, which is when you're talking about the risks involved with the excitement around the DEA announcement. So I think this is really important to talk about is what are people maybe not pricing in or not talking about. So the first is that, you know, what if they go with Schedule 2 over Schedule 3, right? So yeah, you know, probably not going to disagree with HHS, but it's a possibility, right? And if that happens, I mean, the sector would get crushed. It would be brutal, absolutely brutal. So that's definitely something that, you know, we should just be aware of, right? The second bit is a lot of people had said, look, this is all around Joe Biden. Joe Biden appointed the head of the DEA. It's a political appointment. Therefore, he's going to appease Joe Biden, right? Well, let's just think about that now. If the proposed rule does not come in April and instead it comes, you know, all the way out in September, right, or October, what happens from here to there if there is an issue with Joe Biden, right? I mean, you know, we all remember when he fell off his bike, right? I don't think he's allowed to ride bikes anymore. But that something similar to that could be an issue, right? Obviously, he's not in the best of health. I think that's pretty obvious. So what if something happens to him, right? I mean, there could be that point of, hey, look, if the person at the DEA is there to, you know, kind of do his bidding, quote unquote, well, if it looks like he's not going to be the next president, then that person will potentially be out of a job come January 1st, 2025. So do they want to do something that they could then be under the microscope for, you know, a couple months later, right? So I think that's a very real risk. You know, not saying it's like a huge high percentage chance, but it would be very impactful, and it's a very real possibility, especially if the proposed rule doesn't come until right before the election. So I think that's something we should really be careful about. At the very least, it's, from my personal standpoint, it's why I'm not really chasing stocks right now. I do have some fresh money to put into the industry, but I have to, you know, kind of move it over to the account, change it over to US dollars. So I'm kind of thinking, look, let me be patient and wait and see how these things play out. Because if the proposed rule ends up taking, ends up not coming in April and instead it's in October, that's 6 months of which there could be a lot of volatility and opportunity for negativity and negative thought to enter the conversation. And I don't think the traders who are new, you know, the Shardy B squad, I don't think they're ready for the downward volatility that can happen in this industry, you know, in the summertime when there's no activity, when there's enough negative news that people are freaking out.
Yeah, you know, Wolf always talks about his Ides of March, you know, so that's coming up. Who knows, you know, this year's going to be different. It's always different this year, right? anything I've learned in the last 3 years in this sector is you have to throw FOMO right out the window, because it's always going to, if you listen to the headlines, you're always going to have a fear of missing out. And I said the DEA, so the general consensus appears to be out there is that these are political appointments at the HHS and DEA, and they don't go against Biden. But I also look at the DEA's decision will actually cut their budget, right? So how many government agencies are into cutting their budget? I don't know any, right? So the DEA comes out with a Schedule 3. That means, you know, the Congress can start cutting their budget. Well, since it's all legalized, and you don't need to fight this anymore, right? Marijuana. You know, and the smart one would say, hey, yeah, but, you know, 100,000 people in America are dying every year from fentanyl. So we need to make up the money, blah, blah, blah. But and then Biden, you know, his poll numbers, everyone used to mock Trump for his poll numbers. Biden's actually lower than Trump ever was. So, you know, does he, quote unquote, pull a hip muscle and now I can't do anything? So I got to be replaced by, you know, what, Kamala Harris, Michelle Obama.
Probably Michelle Obama, yeah.
Yeah, so, but, okay, so if they roll out with Michelle Obama and she's just like, well, you know, I'm not really concerned about cannabis, you know, so tells the DEA to hold off or something like that. So
well, look, at the very least, like just thinking that through, right? If Biden's sort of out of the picture, I don't know, we're just really spitballing here, but just I think it's important to think through these scenarios, right? Especially because it's so politically driven. Imagine for whatever reason, Biden sidelined and the nominee changes, right? The head of the DEA now, right? They're going to be pretty careful about what they're doing. They're definitely not taking direction from Michelle Obama, right? Or somebody who's not the president, because all of that communication is public and can easily be scrutinized, maybe probably will be scrutinized by whoever comes in next. Right. So if Trump comes in next. So, you know, if you're in that position, you're like, look, whatever we're doing it by the book. Like, we got to cover our asses here, because the last thing I'm doing is taking orders from, you know, somebody who's not actually my boss. And then I'm going to get, you know, called in for a congressional hearing 6 months from now and grilled when the other side is in charge. Right. So yeah. I think those are important considerations. And you know, it's a good point, right? We just don't, there's that uncertainty level there.
But
so, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say that. And the thing I remember when Schumer presented his CAOA and the tanks, the stocks all tanked. And why is that? When he put that out there, he said 25% tax and the verticalness, all these like rules that we know. I think you've interviewed Arcos, you know, CEO of Verano, and he told you why he didn't sign those 20-year lease, you know, agreements, because he thought if somehow verticalness was, he wrote it and you got to pick one, you got to pick either retail, or he didn't want to be tied to all this land. Right. Mm-hmm. And we know the MSOs are all tied to these land for 15 to 20 more years, these long contracts. So what if they come out? Oh yeah, it's we're going to reschedule, but you got to do like alcohol and you can't own the stores if you produce. And if you own the stores, you can't, you know, so what if it comes out, we think it's this great news, and suddenly it's this, you know, garbage news of like, we're going to overregulate, overtax it. Because I'm sorry, I always debate this online when people say Democrats are better for cannabis. I'm saying, how? You know, it's kind of like saying, here, you can fish, but you can only fish during these hours. You have to buy a permit every single week, and we're going to tax you every fish you get. You know, it's like, okay, I guess you'll let me fish, but I got to pay $100 every fish I pull out of the water.
And you and I were chatting about this before. So just to be clear, what you're saying is that the risk potential is that when they reschedule, there is some administrative aspect of rulemaking associated with it. So similar to how when they legalize cannabis in Ohio, right, or Minnesota, okay, it's legal, great, right? That part's done, but now we still need rules and regs to be written on a legislative level.
Yeah,
you're saying, go ahead.
Yeah. So what if they come out and say, interstate commerce is fine. Everyone can ship weed from California. What does that do to everyone on the East Coast and then Florida? And we just don't know. And it's kind of like Germany. They come out and said, hey, we're going to deschedule, because they did. They descheduled, right? But how many years has it taken since that decision to actually come up with the rules? Now, when I interviewed Kim Rivers, CEO of Trulieve, she said, no, there's some action that happens right away, meaning it basically says the states can rule, you know, based on what they have. And I think you can still prohibit. And that's why I think Florida still matters when it comes to a ballot question. I don't know. We just don't know. But I can't think of the government suddenly saying it's a free-for-all. Weed is now rescheduled to 3. So whatever else is 3, you just got to follow those rules. They're going to overregulate. And then they're going to want to find tax money. They're going to want to do all these things. So I just don't know exactly what happens when the DA says, okay. And again, is it just is the DA come out and say, hey, we recommend 3. Okay. So that just says we recommend it, right? And we'll have a nice rally and all that. But what does that mean from there? And Kim Rivers is definitely better than I am. She's a, you know, lawyer, and she knows a lot of stuff. And she says there are things that kick in right away, and it's good for the industry, right? I think she said right away the 280E thing doesn't apply to cannabis. And I asked her, I said, hey, does that mean for the next quarters that fall on, you don't have to pay that 280E? And she was pretty adamant that it's true, that they don't have to pay that 280. They can start deducting expenses. Like we're starting to see at the states now, we're getting rid of that 280E at a lot of these states. So there is things right away that's going to be beneficial to the sector, meaning 280E gone is huge, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. now your EBITDA ratios all, you know, look really attractive. You have some real profitability. A lot of these go from cash flow negative, you know, and I talk about cash flow, free cash flow negative into this cash flow positive. Does it automatically mean safe banking? Does it automatically mean uplisting, which is really the biggest thing possible? And a lot of them think, yes, they'll be able to start a, you know, now it's a Schedule 3. Look at psychedelics, right? Those things got pushed off they got rescheduled, and you can go buy them on the NASDAQ now. So you already have a history and case studies of this stuff. So I think it does enact a lot of things, but are there some negative enactments that have to follow? Meaning like, do they say, well, California is, you know, the biggest, we want that to be the hub of the U.S. cannabis industry, so we're going to allow interstate commerce right away. That's going to scare the crap out of all these MSOs with these 20-year leases. I think Toronto is in a great spot. They win either way. And then, of course, those big producers in California.
Yeah, got it. So the point you're making is that along with rescheduling might come rulemaking, which could be really negative, right? And on the surface, it might be positive, right? The initial news, but then how does it actually play out, right? Which is very fair point.
There's risk. That's my point. The biggest thing, yes. People think there's no risk right now.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think going back to what we were talking about earlier, it's all about the psychology and the sentiment now, because we're so disconnected from fundamentals. Like not that the prices are too crazy. I think it's actually fine. And if you buy today and rescheduling hits, you'll be happy. Even if rescheduling doesn't hit and you just get Florida, fundamentally, that could be enough really for Trulieve, Verano, Curaleaf, Ayr, Cansortium. Those companies will benefit enough that it might really be okay anyway. But as these, you know, if we don't get, going ahead to that April 20th date, that 420 date, if we don't get a DEA announcement by that date, you can start to see people getting concerned, right? And you can start to see the stocks going down, people getting worried. Now, look, maybe that's counterbalanced with, you know, getting it on the ballot in Florida, right? And that would obviously be massive. Maybe it's counterbalanced with, you know, I don't know, Ohio coming online or people getting excited or there being enough buzz and chatter about it. But one of the questions I, you know, kind of wrote here was asking, like, pre-HHS announcement, so meaning like August of last year, MSOS was around $5 to $6 a share, and MSOX was, you know, call it $2 to mid $3 a share. And so you could, I guess my question was, and I wanted to talk about, you know, I put this to you, Mike, how do you see a reality where we go back to that kind of share pricing? You know, was that the bottom, or is there a reality in which we go back to that kind of pricing?
I really think we bottomed last year. That's my personal belief, that you're not going to see MSOX back down to that like 2.25, I think, around area where it was at. I just don't see us going back to that, unless like DA says schedule two or something like that. There is like, you know, I just don't think that'll happen, but there, you know, you can never say never, but I think we have bottomed, just personally, just my opinion on that.
Yeah. I think the point I was kind of getting to and what I was thinking about is, could we get there? I hope not. Right. But if we get some of the things like you're talking about, like we get, you know, a schedule two instead of a schedule three, right, then all bets are off, right? Then
Florida doesn't get on the ballot, and, you know.
Yeah, like if you don't get Florida and then you get, you know, schedule two instead of schedule three, man, people are going to run so fast from these things. Like it would be a stampede to the exits, right? So now, is that the most likely scenario? I doubt it, right? I think we're going to get schedule three, right? I just am worried, what if it takes longer than we think, right? So that's why I really wanted to have this conversation with you, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're just, you know, two regular guys who are managing our own portfolios. But it's interesting to talk through the risks when everyone's excited and say, hey, guys, like, just keep in mind, there are some risks that we can see. There's always risks we also can't see, but there's some risks that we can see here that could end up creating some volatility that, you know, might end up creating good buying opportunities for us, right? If we get to that April timeframe and we do not have a DA decision, and everyone starts freaking out going into May and going into the summer, that could be a really good opportunity to start adding to the positions, right? We don't know, but that's kind of what in the back of my mind I'm thinking about.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of winners no matter what happens. GTI, I think Trulieve, you know, the tier ones and some tier twos. Others that are on life support are just going to end up ending, right? Because they can't. The good thing in this last year is it was so much focus on the debt in end of 22 and into 23 that these, you know, a lot of people, you know, righted the ship into a positive way, and they look really good no matter what happens. So kind of like your interview with Consortium, he was like, I don't think it's going to get Supreme Court, but if it does, it would pass the ballot, even though the 60% threshold, because he's got to prepare for the worst.
Right.
And I think, you know, a lot of these people have really righted the ship, and these companies look really good. I mean, the GTI earnings were just like, in my view, blowout for the last couple of quarters. These companies are really, really stronger. But, you know, you listen to Boris, you know, he's talked about how a lot of these companies just cannot survive at this 280E that just sits there forever. But yeah, there's going to be some buying opportunities if we don't get this. And I remember I still remember this tweet I did back when Trulieve hit $50, and I just did a tech. I'm not a great technical analyst, but I put, hey guys, I think 50 is resistance. And I got bloodied, like bloodied complete. What? No, 180. And I was like, but guys, 50, we've hit this, you know, double top, and I just got bloodied. Right. So tell those guys that it's going to go to like, I think Trulieve got like below 5 at one point. Mm-hmm. So the idea of when we were at 50, there was no way it was ever getting below 30, right? So today for me to say we never go back, you know, that'd be just craziness, right? So I just don't think personally, but it could easily happen. We could easily get some, like I said, all these things I talked about with Biden or DA doesn't do something, then Ford doesn't make it on the ballot because DeSantis was just wrong. And we could really get sent spiraling by the summertime. As Wolf has always pointed out, the Ides of March is never great for cannabis. Doesn't matter what's going on. I think this year is a little bit different, but yeah, never say never. MSOX to two early low twos could happen if the wrong stars line up.
Yeah. And look, absent that, I mean, I think, I think in general, if you already have a lot of exposure to the sector, like I think a lot of us do, I think it's worth just being a little bit patient. You know, like if you can wait until that kind of 420 post mark and see how things play out. But one thing I did learn is, you know, what was my mistake is I wasn't ready to go, right? I didn't have my money loaded. I didn't have my money turned over to US dollars. I didn't have to set up a new account for this, you know, company I have now. So it's like all of these things I should have been ready to go with my finger on the button to take advantage of opportunity. So that's my game plan. I'm being patient. I'm waiting for some of these things. I'm going to see how this plays out over the next little while. Mike, I really appreciate you joining us today. You can follow him at @stock_MJ on Twitter. I think you are a great resource for people. And any plans to bring back your Friday 420 chats?
Yeah, very soon. I think we're kind of, you know, no matter what you see, I think we're trending upwards. I think the sector is ready to go. So I got to bring it back. I'm starting to get some time again to post. If people follow me on Twitter, you'll see I'm more active again. So, yep, I love those. I used to do them even in the worst times, I kept doing them. And now in the best times, I'm not doing them. So it's kind of like an oddity, right? So I'm definitely going to bring those back.
All right, man. Well, listen, I really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Until next time.
This podcast is a general communication and entertainment being provided for informational purposes only. It is educational in nature and not designed to be a recommendation for any specific investment product, strategy, plan, feature, or other purposes. Any examples used in this podcast are generic, hypothetical, and for entertainment purposes only. None of Cannabis Investing Network or its affiliates are suggesting that the listener or any other person take a specific course of action or any action at all. Communications such as this are not impartial and are provided in connection with advertising and marketing of products and services. Prior to making any investment or financial decisions, an investor should seek individualized advice from a personal financial, legal, tax, and other professional advisor that take into account all of the particular facts and circumstances for an investor's own situation. By listening to this communication, you agree with the intended purpose described earlier. Opinions and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions constitute our judgment and are subject to change without notice. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors.